can and will get away with this kind of operation. And the other thing that stems from this is if a person is a permanent resident of Hopkins County, not a student, but a person that has to work for a long period of time, they cannot afford to tamper with Cornell's priorities on this. Otherwise, they will be blackballed by Cornell and be unable to work for any other organization in Hopkins County. So you're always required to furnish references. And if Cornell's personnel file has bad marks in your record for not adapting to the Cornell environment, it's going to be very difficult to get another job, because we all know what the job market is like these days.
One last thing I'd like to ask is, how do the office workers relate to the students?
Well, I would say there's often a situation of hostility, mainly because the students and office workers really don't understand the respective positions involved. Like, how many times have students entered an office, been extremely angry at being unable to accomplish what they came to accomplish, whether it's getting a check, getting schedules signed, and then the secretary sits there and thinks, wow, that student really doesn't understand that I can't do anything. I'm angry at that student for not realizing that there's absolutely nothing the secretary can do, that all the policy-making decisions of the university are made by the secretary's superiors, and the students are frustrated themselves. They take out their frustration on the secretary who's sitting there, not really realizing what the real situation is, that the secretary has to do her job just the way the student has to do his job to stay in the university. So it's a double bind of pitting the students against the office workers, which really shouldn't happen.
The rest of the news would like to remind you that Daniel Ellsberg will be speaking on the Cornell campus in Bailey Hall this Thursday night at 8 o'clock. This has been the rest of the news.
It all happened at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, November 7th, 1962. The man who only 2 years earlier had missed being president by the narrowest margin in history called it his last news conference, his last hurrah.
I leave you gentlemen now, and you will now write it, you will interpret it, that's your right. As I leave you, I want you to know, just think how much you're going to be missing. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore. Because, gentlemen, this is my last press conference.
Unfortunately, like many of Nixon's subsequent assertions, this one proved to have no basis in fact. This is the rest of the news with a report on the status of freedom of the press under the man who once said,
I believe in reading what my opponents say. And I hope that what I have said today will at least make television, radio, the press recognize the great responsibility they have to report all the news.
Freedom of the press. This basic right has long been venerated by Americans, for it affords us some measure of protection against the power of the government to channel our thoughts, to control our lives. Almost 2.5 centuries ago, before America was even free from the colonial rule of Britain, the issue first arose. John Peter Zenger, a young New York publisher, was brought to trial for having attacked in his newspaper the policies of the governor of New York State. To Zenger's defense came Alexander Hamilton, who in a stirring appeal to the jury in the name of the public's right to know, won a verdict of not guilty. As a result of this famous trial, one of the most vital American civil liberties was established, later canonized in the First Amendment to the Constitution.
Congress shall make no law abridging freedom of speech or of the press.
In recent years, the threats to freedom of the press have greatly increased, and it is no exaggeration, but a simple fact, that in the 1970s we are dangerously close to the point where this freedom will be lost in all but toothless theory. The power, if not the letter of the law, is being steadily repealed. The discomfiture and subsequent reprisals of the Nixon administration over the publication of the Pentagon Papers spectacularly highlighted the narrow regard in which our present leaders hold such radically American principles as open access to information and the public's right to know the truth. And the Agnew attacks upon the mass media have become a part of our contemporary cultural paranoia.
When the president completed his address, an address, incidentally, that he spent weeks in the preparation of, his words and policies were subjected to instant analysis and querulous criticism. The audience of 70 million Americans gathered to hear the President of the United States.